Hey, everybody. Welcome to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and I cannot believe that summer has come and gone. I feel like we were just in the throes of getting ready for those vacations, getting ready for the sunscreen, and everybody was all on target to spend a great summer with their families. I hope everybody did that. I hope we all had some quality time with our kids and really enjoyed the great weather and that opportunity to spend a little bonding time. And we're back in it. You know, school's back. We've been doing a ton of back to school stories. I've been having a blast out here doing it. You might have caught me on Hollywood Today Live. And on, if you're in the Los Angeles area, the KTLA Morning News and KABC talking about all the back to school stuff that we have going on. Everybody's got things in their heads, you know, the stress and the worry and also the excitement and the joy of watching your kids excel and learn and get excited about seeing their friends again and getting back into those sports and things like that. So I hope that we're focusing more on the fun of it and the joy of it than the stress of it. And hopefully we'll give you some tools to help get you through it in a less stressed manner. Those organizational skills, those ways to approach the teachers, things like that, things that can prepare your kids. So if you haven't picked up your most recent magazine, Working Mother has got some amazing tips in it, some amazing articles. We've got so much in that September, October issue. I hope you grab it and take a look because there's a lot to be learned from some of these amazing women that we've been interviewing. The experts, the caliber, the content, it's just incredible. And also if you haven't visited workingmother.com recently, you need to catch that too. And speaking of caliber of our experts, we have got an incredible expert for you today. I'm so excited to have her. Her name is Peggy Klaus. She's an executive coach and leader of corporate training programs. And she's also the author of Brag and The Hard Truth About Soft Skills. Thank you so much for being here today with us, Peggy.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Bettina.
Now, I was just looking at your New York Times article and, you know, we were talking about everybody's going back to school and people are, you know, really focused on, you know, excelling in the office that, you know, this is that we're entering that time of year where it kind of becomes crunch time. Everybody's looking at, you know, closing the year out with a bang and those third and fourth quarter numbers and all of that. And, you know, when we start to talk about the workplace, we're talking about excelling and you've got this article about sisterhood is not enough, why workplace equality needs men too. Now, I want to talk about that because the focus right now with the election coming and everything, and we're really hoping that gender wage equality comes to the forefront and the way people are voting and we can shine some light on some women's issues in the country, let alone in the workforce. And you're saying that we need to remember that workplace equality needs men too. What's at the basis of that?
Well, you know, I'm reminded of Linda Ellerbee's wonderful quote, which is, I don't think men want to keep women down. I just think they like being on top. And the truth of the matter
I
is,
love
Gina,
Linda Ellerbee.
is
so
that
great.
Men, you know, still hold the power. And yes, they are a part of the problem why women haven't reached the numbers in the C-suite and in senior executive positions, but they must be a part of the solution because the issue of gender equality is a societal problem that both men and women have to address. So we can't accomplish real change unless we make them a part of the solution. And all of the stats and research on women, you know, that have had us doing women-only efforts to advance women in the workplace continue to show that while women, you know, gathering to help one another in business may have gotten more women in the door, it has done very little to advance them any further. And so we are seeing in some pockets of corporate America how if we embrace men to come in with us and to help, you know, create a solution for this is how we're going to really make a big difference.
Now, I know that a lot of women feel most comfortable in these settings that are all women and they, as though they can really express themselves freely and feel empowered in these all women's conventions and groups and things like that. What do you say to the women who say, you know, yeah, that's great. And I'll let them to try to include men. But I really thrive in these all women settings, and I really feel empowered. And I feel like I walk away with, you know, something positive to bring back to my workplace.
And I think those settings are fabulous. And in truth, I speak at a lot of these women only events. So, I really don't believe that the women conferences are the problem. And I think, in fact, that they have a lot of benefits. But there are a number of large organizations and companies that expect biases and policies to change based on these women's events and occasional trainings and motivational speeches. So when many companies hold these events or send their women employees there, they're doing this, and I'm just going to be very candid, is so that they can check off the diversity box and make the internal and the external public believe that they are dedicated to inclusion. But
I'm going to go to commercial, and I want to talk more about this right after the break. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. Stay with us.
Across the globe, a child goes blind every 5 seconds. We live in a culture saturated with visual cues, but for some, the world is a blur. Since 1997, the Little Rock Foundation has been leading innovative social programs, advancing legislation, and providing information and education to those affected by visual impairment. Gain the resources you need or make a donation today to the Little Rock Foundation. Find us on the web at tlrf.org. You can make a difference.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are continuing our conversation with Peggy Klaus. She's an executive coach and leader of corporate training programs. She's also the author of Brag and the Hard Truth About Soft Skills. Before the break, I was kind of playing devil's advocate, talking about the women's conferences and how, you know, some women feel that that's, you know, where they shine and they, you know, get a lot of motivation and they feel like it's a safe place to speak their mind and really express themselves. And Peggy was saying that, you know, we really do need to incorporate men in what we're doing in terms of getting women to the equal place that we want to be, because it is a societal problem. And that sometimes those conferences are just kind of designed to check off a diversity box, which I find, as you said, candid and true. So, you know, it's as much as we like to sugarcoat things, you know, sometimes that is exactly what people are utilizing these things for. And you know, when you say that women's equality in the workforce is a societal issue, I think that rings true for all of us. What do you think are the keys to making strides in that regard in terms of incorporating the men and really overcoming that societal issue?
Well, I think that, first of all, companies have to be very committed to it. So I think what that entails, Bettina, is to have a CEO right from the top on down through her or his cabinet really committed and embrace this diversity issue. And by that, they then have to put time, money, resources and energy into it. They have to look at unconscious bias training. They have to look at professional development for women in order to move them up the pipeline. So doing something very strategic, sustainable, metric-driven, so that there is a way that these women really do move up the ladder. And they have to look at their hiring practices and the biases that they could incur when women come to interview. So it really is a very broad commitment to this. And it's not a one-size-fits-all. It's not an easy fix. It's going to take money. It's going to take commitment. It's going to take buy-in from everybody.
And, you know, that's a pretty tall order. And it's something that I know we've been moving toward over the past few decades. But really haven't gotten 100, you know, over the hump, obviously. when, you know, I know that you do a lot of speaking and you do work with a lot of these companies. Are you seeing a lot of change in your, as you move through these companies, as you're talking to people, are you seeing a lot of change in the way that the men are thinking?
What's making me hopeful and not throwing myself in front of a BART train here in San Francisco with depression around the numbers that keep coming up is that I think the momentum is gathering, and that it's more in the media. It's more in the zeitgeist. You've got CEO of Salesforce, Mark Benioff, who, when this whole issue with Bradley Cooper and him finding out that his co-star was getting less than he was, that he went to bat, and then Mark Benioff said, what is my organization doing around pay? And realized that there was discrepancy between men and women pay. So he immediately fixed that. And he is very much of a zealot now about this whole issue around women succeeding. So I think that with certain kind of star CEOs coming out and saying, this isn't just a business issue. This is just what we have to do. This is just our values.
It's an ethical issue. Yeah.
It's an ethical. It's just not right to have this, you know, discrepancy. And so I'm feeling, I am feeling more hopeful. The truth of the matter is that it's like turning around the Titanic.
Well said. We're going to be back with more with Peggy Klaus right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio.
Small business comes in all shapes and sizes. Your financing options should, too. Benetrends Financial offers a full suite of small business and franchise funding options to help entrepreneurs like you get the best funding options possible, quickly, safely, and economically, so you can finally purchase the business of your dreams. Sign up for a free funding consultation today, and we'll design a customized funding plan for you. Visit Benetrends.com. That's Benetrends.com to find out more. Benetrends.
Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are continuing our conversation with Peggy Klaus. She is an executive coach and leader of corporate training programs and the author of Brag and the Hard Truth About Soft Skills. And before the break, we were talking about the momentum that seems to be happening culturally right now with the what Peggy was referring to as star CEOs and people like Bradley Cooper coming out and speaking. And we're talking about men here. Coming out and speaking in favor of women's equality and equal pay, and how it really is just and it really comes down to, it's an issue of right and wrong at the end of the day. To me, it's so basic from that perspective that is it right for someone to be paid less than someone else for doing an equal job? No, it's not. It's so simple. It's so basic. Yet why does it continue to persist? And what Peggy was saying was that momentum is happening in terms of the media and just the overall feel in society right now, that people are starting to stand up, men and women together, and say, yeah, you know what, this is wrong. And so you do place a lot of value, because a lot of people aren't placing a lot of value on things like Bradley Cooper speaking out. Oh yeah, well yeah, that's great and all. He's a star. He can afford to do that. But you do see that as being a part of turning the Titanic around.
Absolutely. I mean, we look to these people. They are in the media. They are right in our faces. And when we see Bradley doing that and coming out and saying, no, this isn't right in the entertainment field, which actually happens all the time in Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
If in some small, you know, way he can start that ripple so that other stars will do that with their co-stars. And then that creates, I mean, it was truly that happening that let Mark Benioff look at his own organization. And then from there, you know, other people are starting to go, what are the biases that we have? And what's the gender parity here? And so I think it's remarkable.
I think it's fantastic. Because I was speaking to somebody actually at a party the other day, and they were saying, you know, oh, well, you know, he's Bradley Cooper. He can afford to, you know, shave a few million off what he's making, whatever. And I said, but you know what? it does matter, and you can't be cynical like that because he is so high profile. And yeah, he can afford to do it, but the people who can afford to do it are the ones who need to start the process, because the CEOs and those are the people who are making the most money, and those are the ones who are creating the policies, and it is all trickling down from them. So I do think it's fantastic what they're doing, and the more high profile male CEOs who do this type of thing, or Hollywood stars, or male high profile, high paid, period, continue to do this. I think it is going to make a huge difference.
And it doesn't start from anywhere but from the top. I mean, the top has really got to buy into it. So you've got a guy like Larry Fink at BlackRock, who said when they acquired Barclays, and they said, oh, well, we're now a global bank, and look at our numbers with women. They really stink. So what are we going to do about this? And he really threw himself and the entire firm into looking at this issue and creating a women's leadership forum, which is just a wonderful program that is helping women to get to those top layers and decision-making, points on the global council and et cetera. So it's really important to have those kind of torchbearers, as well as women, And again, I want to go back and say, as my article said, I love women events. There's an incredible feeling and inspiration and motivation, and yes, you get to hear some really incredibly raw things when women are together and they're not mm-hmm. worried about how it's going to sound to men, but it is if we only continue to talk to ourselves, if we only continue to see this as a women's problem, we are really missing the boat.
I think that's really wise, really wise. And let's talk about BRAG, because I heard you said BRAG actually stands for something. What does BRAG stand for?
Well, BRAG, the art of tooting your own horn without blowing it, is the full title of the book.
The art of tooting your horn home without your own horn without blowing it. I love that. That
yes.
is so great. So so now you have two books, though. You have BRAG and you have The Hard Truth About Soft Skills.
Yes.
Explain for those who aren't familiar, what are soft skills?
Well, soft skills are really anything that aren't the hard skills that you acquire, like financial expertise, legal expertise, that kind of things. And the soft skills are really your interpersonal skills, the way that you can effectively interact with others. So it can be self-management, communication, political savvy. Those types of things, which are more difficult, and some people will argue less tangible, and others would argue less teachable than the hard skills. You can go into MIT and learn engineering and those skills, or get an MBA and learn, quant skills. But to learn how to get connected with other people, to impact other people with your ideas and your opinions, is something else again. And about 90% of executives that were just asked, about hiring said employees that they are looking at do not have these essential soft skills.
Mm-hmm. So where can people find you if they want to learn more about where to get BRAG or The Hard Truth About Soft Skills? Where can they find you online and on social media?
Well, online it's Peggy at PeggyKlaus.com, and got a website which will tell you more than they would probably ever want to know about me, workshops and articles and truly everything, Bettina.
Fantastic. And thank you so much for joining us today. If you want to learn more, like she said, you can go to PeggyKlaus.com. It's spelled PeggyKlaus. And, I think that this kind of information is so valuable. And I just really appreciate you being here on the show with us today.
My pleasure.
I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. We'll be back with more right after this.
Hey,
Hey, it's Alan Taylor. Are you looking for an opportunity to buy a franchise, one that you can really wrap your arms around? Crunch Fitness is really a great opportunity for you. Now, here's a fitness company that's about 10 bucks a month to join. So even if you just want to join, it's a great deal. You want to check it out because I have been personally watching this company grow like crazy. Visit them online at crunchfranchise.com and be in business for yourself, but not by yourself, and have fun doing it.
Everybody, welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. And before we were talking with Peggy Klaus, we were discussing the whole going back to school and all the back to school stories that we've been doing. And it's been really so much fun to get into the swing of getting the kids excited and, you know, and talking to moms and dads about the things that they can do to ease the transition, like their sleep schedules, adjusting the sleep schedules back on track and preparing the kids for their classrooms and their new teachers and having those conversations that aren't always easy, but that are important about whether or not they're feeling anxiety, anything like that. Another thing that actually comes up a lot when we're starting school that we haven't had a chance to touch on yet is when you're dealing with your caretakers and your nannies. You know, for us here in the United States, we've got, you know, 60% of our kids are being cared for by caretakers and nannies. And it's something that we don't really talk about a whole lot in terms of how you deal with transitioning with your kids with nannies. And I think it's an important subject because these people do become very important fixtures in your kids' lives. And there's a lot more to it than just being the person who's shuttling them around or making sure they get fed. There's a whole nother level to nannying and caretaking that I think that we need to dive into a little deeper. And here today is an expert in that, Florence N. Romano. And she is the author of Nanny and Me, and she also has another upcoming book. And she's going to talk to us today about when we're getting back into school, easing the transition from one caretaker to another, if that's the situation you're finding yourself in, and some tips on how to do that in a way that is positive for your children. Thanks so much for being here, Florence.
Thank you for having me. This is my favorite kind of station. We're talking to moms. That's my favorite. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, we've got, you know, all of our working mothers, you know, we're all dealing in some way with putting our kids in someone else's hands during the day. And
right.
And many of us have nannies. And, you know, some are fortunate enough to have had these nannies since birth. And sometimes, you know, different situations happen and life takes over and you end up needing to transition from one nanny to another. And that can be a very difficult, jarring thing for a child.
It absolutely can. And even just having a nanny in general can be a difficult transition for children, because the worst thing kids can ever do is compare themselves to their friends or other children, right? That's always the worst, because they're like, oh, you know, Susie does this or Tommy does this, and it's not the same thing in our house. And they can be just plagued with these feelings of being different and guilt and all sorts of things. And that's also something that the parents are feeling as well. They're having emotions about dealing with transition and dealing with bringing someone in to trust their most precious possessions with, and that's very difficult. So when you're dealing with two very different parts of the equation, but the common denominator being trust and making it as seamless as possible and making sure that you feel secure and safe and loved, and bringing peace of mind to the situation, that's what matters most when dealing with the transition from either the parent side or the child side.
Now, let's say, for example, I have a friend who's going through a transition right now, and she had a nanny unexpectedly have to leave. And so she's in the process of hiring someone new, and she's very concerned about setting the kids up for success with the new nanny in terms of that, you know, they had the other one during their toddler years, and you know, now they're going in elementary school, and she's just concerned that this person's going to have to earn their trust and earn their respect, and what the learning curve is for that, and making sure that, you know, that they listen to her the way that they were listening to the other one. How do you set your child up for success in that kind of scenario?
Onboarding is very difficult from the parent side and the child side, which I generally am always trying to give both perspectives, you know, from how different it can be and also how similar it can be. But when you're used to somebody, when you're used to someone's way of discipline, when you're used to someone's way of loving you and making you feel good, it can be very difficult to bring someone new into the house and really allow them in emotionally and trust them. And it really comes down to the onboarding process with the parents. And that's what I would suggest to your friend and to any family out there that is bringing a new nanny in, whether or not that children have had a nanny before or it's going to be a new nanny like your friend. It starts with the parents making sure that that nanny is an extension of the values of that family. What is important to them? What do they want the relationship with the child and the nanny to be? The parents need to make sure they are a unit with the nanny, a unified front of this is, you know, where the discipline is coming from, this is where the expectations are coming from, and everyone is on the same page and everything is transparent and candid. If the children see you and your relationship with the nanny as a positive one and you get along and there's a great rapport there and you trust them, that is going to permeate the children's feeling about that nanny as well. They do pay attention to how you are. So if you are a little trepidatious with the whole thing, if you're not trying to illustrate this transition and is in a bright and positive way, then the children are going to feed off of that energy. So it really needs to start with you, the parent, and you, the nanny, and how you guys are going to parent these children together, because the children are going to pay attention to what you're saying and what you're doing.
Now, okay, from I really like that advice, first of all. I think that that's really great advice, because I do feel as though there has to be this united message going to the kids, and that's so important. I've been fortunate enough to have the same person with us since my daughter was 11 weeks old, so I've never had to do a transition, knock on wood. I pray that I never do, because it seems to be something very bumpy. I've had experiences with friends who have had nannies come on board where they set things up so that they were all on the same page, but then they were noticing the nanny wasn't following through on the conversations that they had had. So the nanny was losing the parents' trust, and then the kids were seeing this kind of conflict between the nanny and the parents. How do you handle that without the kids feeling like that's somehow their fault?
That is, oh gosh, that is the biggest problem, is when all of a sudden you're going to have to make a game time decision about this nanny. Because again, it's what's right for you, the family, for you, the parent, and it being an extension of what's important to you and your spouse, or if it's a single family home, whatever's important to you. If you start to see that things aren't being followed through the way that you want them to be, then it first step is to have a conversation with the nanny about the things that aren't going the way you want them to. But the second thing, if things don't get better, if the trial period that you're giving to it, you know, doesn't adjust, then you need to address it with the children and almost treat it like a child of divorce. And I say this very often, and not to put a negative spin on, you know, children that come from divorce, but when you are dealing with that situation, you always have to reinforce to the children that they didn't do anything wrong. It's not their fault. And the same goes for transitioning a nanny out of your home. No matter what happened with that nanny, whatever the conflict was between the nanny and the parents, you don't want to involve the children, like you said. So you need to reinforce them that they are wonderful and great and kind, and it just so happens that it's time for this nanny to move on to something else in their life, and then get excited about the new person that's going to come and help, and let them help you get involved with that process. They might not be choosing the nanny necessarily, but they should be involved in the process. They should be involved in the interview process. That nanny, prospective nanny, should be coming into the home, and the children should be playing with him or her, and the parents should be observing. And I always tell every parent, my secret weapon, if your kids are old enough to talk, use that unfiltered personality that they have at a young age to ask what they really think of that nanny.
Get the intel.
They do. They have the intel. They have the sixth sense. They have the intuition. Ask them what they think. They're going to tell you the truth, and you should not discount their feelings. So when dealing with transitioning out, I really truly believe that children can deal with anything that's put in front of them as long as they are prepared and feel like there is an element of control there for them. So get them excited for the next person to come in and let them feel involved in the process, and then they're not going to worry as much about the person leaving as excited they are going to be about someone else coming in that might be fulfilling their dreams in a different way.
I like this. All right, we're going to be back with more right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio. Stay with us.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
Everybody, welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host, and we are talking with Florence Ann Romano. She is known as the Windy City Nanny from Chicago, and she has written a fantastic book called Nanny and Me, and she's also working on another book. And she's talking to us today about transitions and nannies. But, you know, I also want to talk to you about what do you do? I had a friend actually ask me to ask you this question.
Oh, I love that. Okay.
What do you do when you have done everything right in terms of setting up the nanny to be on the same page as you in terms of values, and you see the nanny following through in the proper way, but your kids just are not listening to the nanny or just are not respecting what the nanny's doing as they are respecting you, let's say, when you're saying these same things, you're arming the nanny with all the tools, and you're empowering the nanny with the child, and you're saying, you know, this is how it's going to go. But the child, just when you're not there, is just not falling into line.
Well, children generally like to push the limits, like to test their limits and see what they can get away with, especially when their parents aren't around. I've seen it firsthand. You know, the kids, you know, think that they can eat all the junk food in the world that they want when the nanny's around and the parents aren't, and it's just a free-for-all. And kids are going to try that. And I can understand your friend being concerned, because all she wants is this nanny to be an extension of her. And my definition of a nanny is the parent's eyes, ears, and heart. That's what the nanny is. And so I would suggest to sit down, the parents sit down with the children and say exactly those words to the children if they're old enough to understand them, that, you know, this person is there in mommy's absence and daddy's absence to make sure that they are protected and they are loved and that they are having wonderful adventures and so much fun. And they can have that fun as long as they're also listening, as long as they are doing what mom and dad would expect them to do. So I think it's perfectly appropriate to put those expectations on the children and say, you know, hey, you know, mom and dad expect you to act a certain way. And when, you know, so-and-so is with you, you know, the same rules apply. And don't think that you're not going to get in trouble if you don't do it. You know, threatening, it works. And I know it's just the way it is. And it might seem so super simple, but I would tell your friend that, hey, if they don't follow what's going on, then there are going to be certain, you know, ramifications for that. And there might be grounding. There might be, you know, things that are taken away from them. They need to know that this person needs to be respected. And the truth is, children will respect that person, that nanny, if the nanny is going to earn that respect and that security from the children. So I always recommend to the nannies that are having a difficult time with the children during this transition that you customize your relationship with each of them. Really find out who they are, what makes these kids tick, what's important to them, and start to develop those bonds where they do start to trust you. And then as soon as that happens, the behavior will follow.
I agree with that. And, you know, something that I've noticed is because I've had the same person in my life and my kids' lives, she's a member of the family to us. We, you know, it's been 6 years now. And what I've noticed is that because we're in such a great rhythm and, you know, and I come and she goes and all of that, that sometimes I forget to check in with her about some of the things that are changing as the kids are getting older and things that I want them to be transitioning to doing, like changing their chores up and, you know, certain things that I want to make sure get touched on before, you know, I get home. And, you know, it's probably smart to set some type of timetable or some type of schedule for checking in with your nanny, yeah?
I love that you mentioned that, Bettina, because, you know, the parenting doesn't stop just at the nanny, and that's my number one rule, is just because you have a nanny or a caretaker doesn't mean your role as the parent is over. And there are some homes where that is the case, where the nanny is there and they're really going to be doing a lot of the raising of this child. And I am not here to shame families, for what they do in their home. The nanny is there to take care of the children and make that work. So whatever the case is in your family, then that's fine for you. But in terms of what the nanny should be doing with the child, there are so many different milestones that kids are going to hit at different times. And you, the parents, still want to be involved in that. And you also have expectations for your children as they get older and things, skills that you want them to be proficient in, or you want them to practice. I mean, manners and please and thank yous, and even if it's potty training or anything like that, the nanny is an extension of those things that need to be happening at home in your absence. So you're right. Speaking to your nanny about the things that are important to you at the milestone times that they're going to be important, you should be doing. And maybe that's as easy as you sit down almost like kind of like a business, like once a quarter, you're going to sit down with your nanny and you're going to go out to lunch or dinner and you're going to talk about where the kids are and what's going on in their lives. And they have a different view of the children and what's going on in the home than you do, because sometimes they're seeing things that you're not. And it's not to make you feel guilty ever, ever, ever. It's supposed to just be another set of eyes on your children. So yes, definitely sit down with your nanny and talk about the things that you want to make sure they're working on. Sometimes that's education. I always tell families, education is a completely loaded word. It means something different to every single family. Sometimes education means just working on math and science and flashcards and workbooks. Other families are like, no, it's not just what happens in the classroom. It's going to theater. It's going to the zoo. It's doing things that are stimulating them in a different way. And do you want the nanny to be involved in that? So yes, definitely sit down with your nanny and have these conversations about what you want your child doing during the course of that year and how your nanny can help reinforce that.
Such great advice. We're going to be back with more with Lauren San Romano right after this. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. You're listening to Working Mother Radio.
On the track, even 1/100th of a second decides who wins and who loses. That's why Bridgestone uses advanced racing technology to create their fastest street-legal replacement tire yet, the new Bridgestone Potenza RE71R. Engineered with an innovative hydro-evacuation surface and unique tread compounds, the new Potenza RE71R is designed to give you maximum grip and ultimate cornering on or off the track. Bridgestone is changing the game in tire performance.
Welcome back to Working Mother Radio. I'm Bettina Bush, your host. And before we continue our conversation with Florence and Romano, I would love to know, Florence, if people want to hear more about what you're up to, get your book, visit you on social media, and have a chat with you, ask you for some advice, where can they find you online?
I would love anyone to visit me at any time. I'm always here to help. My website is florenceannromano.com, and I am also very active on Facebook, which is Florence Ann Romano Author. And you can find links to get my book on any of those places. As also, you can go just directly to Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, or Amazon and grab Nanny and Me right from there.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And before the break, we were talking about how every household defines education differently. And these are the conversations that we do need to have with our nannies. And I, just as you were talking about that, I was thinking to myself, yeah, we've been struggling with my daughter with her tying her shoes. She just has zero desire to tie her shoes.
So does everyone, right? I don't want to tie them either.
Not interested at all. And, you know, and it's getting to the point where I'm like, okay, you know what? We just need to sit down and just do some practice. And she always says, well, I want to get creative about it. And instead of tying a regular, you know, shoelace, she does like something funky with it. And, you know, she's like, but the laces aren't hanging down and it's staying on my foot. And I'm like, oh, good Lord, can we just tie our shoes properly? But, you know, it's like, you know, you see these little aspects of your kids' personalities and you know that the nanny's seeing it too. And so, you know, we talk about how to work together with her personality being, you know, this little creative person that she is, and how to get her to, you know, engage with actually learning the proper way so that she can then get creative about it. But, you know, it's these are the things that when you have a nanny and it's and the fit is working well with your family, that you can have those types of conversation with them, and like you said, they're another set of eyes and ears in your household, and they understand your child the way, you know, in the same way, yet a different way than you do. And I just feel like the perspective that you can get from that person who's not mom and not dad can be so valuable, and we really do need to leverage it and use it, you know, in a way that's going to benefit our kids. So if you do have that caretaker in your home, you know, do make sure that you're keeping those lines of communication open, and also making sure that they feel comfortable coming to you and not like, you know, you're going to get defensive or you're going to, you know, get on them about something if they share information with you about your child.
Right. I always tell parents, because, you know, the mom shaming thing happens, the mom guilt happens, and I have been right there to see it. And what I like to say to kind of help moms understand the role of a nanny and that, how important that reciprocal relationship is, think about the nanny as a godmother or an aunt, or if it's a male nanny, an uncle, or, you know, a godfather to your child. And that will start to help you not feel so guilty about that child bonding to the nanny. Because in my life, I come from a very big family, and I have relationships with lots of aunts and uncles, and I love them all very much, and they all serve a different purpose in my life. And if you can start to think of your nanny as an aunt or an uncle or a godparent to your child, that they are there to love and protect them and have fun with them and provide different memories for them and teach them different lessons, then that's going to help kind of fight against the guilt and fight against the idea of having to be competitive with the nanny. Because don't you want your kid to be surrounded with as much love as possible? And I mean, that's truthfully what it is. And if someone else is able to get through to your child in a way that maybe you're not, instead of being competitive about it or thinking that, oh gosh, I'm such a bad mom, why didn't I think about that? You know, your brain is doing a million different things a day, and it was your job to have that baby. It's your job still to be the parent to that child for the rest of their life. But it does make a difference having a group of people there to support you through it that can help take the load off of you sometimes. And that's what a nanny is there for, where you may not have the time to sit there, and you were talking about tying the shoe, maybe not have the time to put all of that customized attention to that exact skill that she needs to accomplish. The nanny can help do that and help trying to figure out what is going to help your daughter really stimulate her and get her to be motivated to learn that skill, even when she's kind of least expecting it. It's always the best when kids don't even realize they're learning.
And, exactly. And that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, you know, she's better at sliding that in there, you know, rather than making it, you know, okay, this is our goal for the day, like I can tend to be. You know, she's better at, like, all of a sudden, oh, she tied her shoe. She didn't realize it wasn't even her idea to tie her shoe. And then she's like, look what I did.
Exactly.
You know, she's got a different way of doing it. And, you know, you touched on something that reminded me. I will never forget when my daughter was 2 years old, I was talking to a group, and someone was talking about a mom who, this mom was just extremely jealous of the nanny, and the nanny, the little boy had hugged the nanny and said, I love you so much. And the woman fired the nanny because she was jealous of the heart. And I said to myself, my God, if my child doesn't love my nanny, that's when the nanny's fired. If my child is not feeling as loved by that nanny as she feels by me, that's when I know I have a problem. Not when my child's hugging them saying, I love you, please don't come, don't worry, you're coming back tomorrow. You know, it's like, I mean, my God, it was just so twisted to me. And I feel like it really does take a village to raise a family. And we all know that. And so what if one of those people in that village is being paid? You know, that's the only difference. You know, it's the difference between I don't have the aunt nearby. So, you know, I've found someone who is here to love my child and to help me raise this child. Right. It's not, there's nothing, there's no shame in that. And there's certainly no competition or jealousy that is appropriate in that.
I love that you say that, because I wish you were the majority. I wish you were the majority that felt that way, that, you know, you want the child to love them. And so what's if they're being paid? That's the luckiest nanny in the world, that they get paid to love a child, to get paid to do what they love. It's anyone else who's working in a profession that they love. If they could be a stockbroker and be like, I can't believe I get paid because I love what I do so much. It's the same for anybody. You should love what you do. And if a nanny loves what they do, then you are just, you know, 10 times blessed, because they are taking care of what's most important to you, what's most valuable, what's most irreplaceable. So you are luckier than anyone else in the world if you're able to say that your nanny, you know, is in love with those kids.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being here today. I love this subject, and I'm so glad to have you here to help kind of, you know, integrate this conversation into our lives, because like, as we said before, you know, 60% of the kids in this country are being taken care of by a caretaker. And this is a conversation that does need to happen, and there shouldn't be shame in it. So thanks so much, Florence, for opening up that conversation for us.
Thank you for having me. My favorite conversation. So I do appreciate being able to talk about it, and with a beautiful person like yourself. So thank you.
Thank you so much. And you know what? That's it for this week. We're done. I can't believe it. These shows fly by so fast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Don't forget to visit us on workingmother.com. Don't forget to hit me up on Facebook and Twitter at Bettina Bush, BettinaBush, or on Instagram at Bettina Bush Official. And don't forget, there's no way to be a perfect mom, but there are a million ways to be a good one. We'll see you next week.
Where does the love for a car come from? If the car is a Subaru Legacy, the answer would be the symmetrical all-wheel drive. Power goes to all four wheels all the time for optimum grip. The Subaru Boxer engine's lower center of gravity makes the Subaru Legacy more responsive around corners and gets better fuel economy than front-wheel drive competitors. What you have then is a midsize sedan with grip, handling, and enviable fuel economy. It's no wonder it turns people into people who love cars. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru.